Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Hi, I'm Kevin.
And I'm Eric.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
Welcome back, everybody. We're thankful to have Kyle with us again.
Hi.
To take us across the finish line.
Thanks for having me. What a mistake on y'all's part.
I know. Kyle's got the Conan knowledge that Eric and I lack.
That's right. He's adding a degree of respectability to this otherwise completely drunken podcast. That was very Robert Smigley of you, by the way, in terms of your Arnold impersonation.
Well,
there.
So in the very first Conan movie, Arnold didn't speak a line of dialogue for like the first 30 minutes of the movie. So the only things we got from him, I think, were various grunts,
yeah,
and battle noises. And they did, because they I think they knew we don't want to let this guy talk until we have to, you know. But man, I saw some recently like deleted scene from that movie where it was very well written, him and it was right before the big climactic battle with him and Subutai, and they were like just talking about like where the wind carries us, and he's telling you don't have to, Subutai, you don't have to, you can leave, man. And he's like, no, the wind would always bring me back to the same place. And I'm like, oh, this is like philosophical shit.
Wow.
Like, but that's John Milius can actually write.
Yeah.
I think he has big philosophical ideas, and then he's also sort of a right-wing weirdo.
Oh my God. I mean, you weren't with this when we were doing Red Dawn, but like anecdotally, he carried a gun with him on set every day of Red Dawn.
and Walter from Big Lebowski is supposedly Milius. The Coen brothers, like, who are tight with him, wrote that character as like, this is what it's like to be friends with John Milius.
That is funny. Okay. Now
the look, even he has the look and everything.
Well, yeah,
this is
tidbit.
Not Nam. There are rules.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'll never see that movie the same way again.
Yeah, dude,
I
mean,
thanks, Kevin. I think it makes it better, honestly.
Yeah,
I think
the movie has
just gotten better knowing that that's Milius.
Yeah. Well, didn't Oliver Stone write the first draft of that screenplay?
He wrote it, I think, and then Milius might add some touches. Or
okay.
Something. And then
another weirdo, frankly.
Left wing weirdo.
Yeah. I watched JFK for the first time in like 20 something years.
Okay.
The other night.
Still good?
Well, you know, I
dug that. I remember
I'm
thinking like, wow, what a cast.
Boy, it goes down some rabbit holes, especially when you watch the 3-hour version.
Yeah. And do you have a preference between comic book Conan and the serial novel Conan?
Oh, man, I don't know. They both have their charms. You know, comic book Conan's easier to read because if you ever try to read something from like the 30s, like fantasy or science fiction stuff, it's like kind of dry and purple.
Okay.
They were getting paid by the word. So I kind of prefer the comics also because the comics sometimes would adapt stories that weren't Conan stories. They would get like Brack the Barbarian or some other, you know, Conan alike and just license it and put Conan in it instead, which to me is kind of fun.
Did the Conan and the Red Sonja comics like intersect?
Oh yeah.
They were like crossover issues and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I know like Red Sonja was as written by, what's his name? Not Thomas.
Roy Thomas, yeah.
No, Howard.
Robert Howard,
But she wasn't a barbarian figure at all, right? She was like,
She was like, I think
it was like Crusades or
something? Yeah, she was like in the French Crusades, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's just a weird thing, but
it's
I guess.
Red Sonja instead of Red Sonja, with a Y instead of a J.
But yeah, I dig all that. I also wanted to run it past you, and I don't think I've ever told you, Eric, this either, that it's come up on the podcast before. We have a theory this movie doesn't quite fall into, but I want to run it past you about this, the Arnold like multiverse
theory
where you guys know twins.
Yeah, sure.
Where he's like a genetic, the result of a genetic government experiment or whatever.
Okay.
So then he was raised on this island by whatever. But we have this theory that like any one of these movies where Arnold is like this super soldier, like present day super soldier, it's like a clone of Julius Benedict.
Okay.
Like they're all happening in the same shared universe. Okay. So like Commando, Predator, all these where it's like he's a miscellaneous, very clearly not American soldier fighting with the Americans, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Like
okay.
Anyone where he's a super cop or whatever, it's all shared Arnold universe.
Would that, would like Terminator 3 count where he's like a soldier that is not the Terminator?
Oh, what? Remind
Terminator
me.
Terminator 3? Yeah, because like in Terminator 3, there's like a video of this Sergeant Candy that he plays. It's like the basis of the T-800.
Oh, that he was like the model, the prototype they used to model the Terminator?
Yeah.
Yes, that soldier would have been a Julius Benedict.
Okay, got
it. So now I never knew that the Terminator verse linked to our Arnold multiverse theory.
Wow. They do some ADR, and it's not his voice. He has like a southern accent.
Like True Lies, he's totally just another Julius Benedict clone.
Yeah.
It works over time too, because you know, even if the movie's 10 years later than Predator or whatever, it's like, well, but Arnold's 10 years later, but the clone is just aged. He's 10 years older. This version, like, they must have had a 20 or 30 Julius Benedict clones, and they're inserted into multiple like government organizations or whatever. I'm here for it. I want to write this screenplay.
I am like, this is trademark. The first I'm hearing about it, but can you imagine like Predator Conan, Red Heat Conan, Terminator Conan? I mean, or rather Arnold. I keep saying
Conan's like one of his few things that doesn't sort in or anything that's set way in the future.
Yeah. It does.
Although it could still be a rehash, like a new
DNA.
Clone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could still have made a new clone and Running Man Conan.
Running
Man Arnold.
Arnold, well, also, I know I've still seen it. He has that thick accent, but his dad, played by William Smith in
Twins?
No. I mean in the first Conan movie.
Yeah.
He does not have the same accent as his son.
Adopted.
Well, yeah, that's true, because all the clones wouldn't have the same accent, but they wouldn't have had time to age either. We gotta workshop this a little bit more.
But I think there is a movie
unless
here.
They can advance the age artificially in some way.
I'm sure that they could, but I do think
they could. The government. We also talk about in Commando, he's working for the government people. That's the explanation that's given. We're like, yes, the government people could advance his age. They have the technology. The government people.
Right.
That's the laziest screenwriting I've ever seen.
God.
Who would this be that's managing him? Fuck it. Just say it's the government people. That's a placeholder. We'll fix that later. And then no one came back.
I love the idea that in the script, it's actually in parentheses, the government people.
Government people.
Because they were going to come back and replace it with an actual agency.
Someone tell us, is that CIA? Is that ATF? Who would that be? It's just fuck it. It's the government people. It's like the Men in Black, you know? Anyway, I'm sorry. So that,
no, it's priceless.
But yes, I wanted to get y'all's feelings. I wanted to test the temperature of the room.
I'm 100%.
You guys are into it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
The technology exists now to like merge all these versions of Arnold into one thing.
Look, the multiverse is in right now. You got to strike while the iron's hot.
You it quick, because it's running. The time's running out, man.
Burning bright.
It might be over.
Oh. Yeah, but we're here to finish out Conan the Destroyer. Arnold's, I mean, I'm going to consider this like really his second movie. Honestly, I don't count Hercules in New York.
I mean, weren't all his lines dubbed too in that one?
Yeah, that's not really an Arnold movie. Yeah. Like,
he's almost an extra in his own
movie. And Pumping Iron, that doesn't count as like, that's nonfiction.
It's a documentary.
My mind's still blown that this movie came out before Terminator. They cranked out two Conans before the first Terminator.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's because this movie does feel like the later 80s when the end age, the late stage barbarian, the late stage of the barbarian genre, it really burned.
It was pretty much dead and dying by about 1984. Yeah.
Okay. Eric, do you want to try to recap what's happened in this plot?
Oof, this is such a complicated plot. So Conan is approached by a bunch of masked warriors at the beginning of the movie who he defeats easily. The leader of the group takes off of her masks, and we reveal that it's Queen Taramis, She says, I can bring your dead loved one, your dead love back to life if you come to my castle and let me explain what I need you to do. He goes back to her castle. She says, this girl, Jenna, Princess Jenna, she's got a birthmark that we don't care about, but the prophecy says that she's going to get some horn, and the horn is going to allow me to bring back your dead girlfriend. So off they go on an adventure. They slowly pick up more and more members of their team along the way. They get to one MacGuffin, which is in a castle in the ocean, and they get the MacGuffin, which is this magical jewel, which is also a key. As they flee the castle, they're attacked. They survive the attack. They run to a second castle. They put the key in a magical door, which opens up, and they find the second MacGuffin, which is the actual horn.
Yeah.
The BDSM army, who we met earlier, who wants the horn to go back on the god, is still
they're
fighting.
They're still trying
Conan.
To stop them.
Right. They're still trying to stop him. They escape the BDSM army. Mbata, who has been constantly undermining them this entire time, finally shows his true hand. He causes a cave-in in the tunnels that they're fleeing through. He and Jenna escape back to the castle. Conan and them finally make it outside, where the horses have conveniently been left unperturbed. And Conan says, I knew it was a lie all along, basically. I'm going to go stop her from being sacrificed. And everybody's like, all right, we'll come along. I think that's about it.
Dude, that was efficient. That was economical.
Right. Okay, excellent. Excellent.
As you were saying that story, I realized like this whole movie could have been like a half an hour of a TV show.
Yeah,
show,
yeah.
Right?
It could have been one episode.
Because it's been, they just went to collect the horn and come back. And like essentially nothing that's happened before this moment even matters anymore.
Nope.
All they've done is they've got the horn now.
I mean, famously,
MacGuffin has arrived at the gatekeeper, the keymaster have been like brought together finally. But so sometime later, Bombada and Jenna, they return to Queen Taramis's castle. Peacocks everywhere. Like, I imagine they're just shitting everywhere.
It's kind of a cool touch, though, you know, for a queen.
That set was incredible. Yeah, wasn't it? Like that great hall.
It was. I feel so sorry for that production designer, though. Or not the production designer, because you're just going to have a bunch of PAs clean up all the bird shit.
Yeah, true.
right.
But so Jenna, she presents the horn to Taramis. Taramis's priest or wizard or whoever the fuck he is, looking entirely too much like the leader of the Keepers of the Horn.
Uncanny. Like, was it the same actor? Because
no,
I was...
I don't think so, but that's bad filmmaking,
I
isn't
mean,
it?
It's just unbelievable.
Or bad production design or bad hair and makeup or
Look,
something.
As a bald guy with a beard, generally speaking, I'm all about bald guys with beards in movie, but even I'm not on board with this one.
No, I mean, like, if you're a child watching this movie, or if you're a very drunk man, this appears to be the same guy.
Yeah,
oh,
of course.
Absolutely.
I'm like,
I was neither, and I was confused.
I'm like, hey, why is that guy the same guy, right? And I had to look and see. Well, he has rewound, and I'm like, no, it's different. He just has the same fucking look.
And he has the same motivation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he wants to bring Dagoth back to. I mean, done.
So now we see Conan and his company. They're arriving at the castle as other soldiers from Taramis's army are arriving as well. And this is where we see that amazing foreground miniature shot with the castle up on the mountain that looked fucking flawless.
Yeah,
and this was like all I think in camera effects.
Mm-hmm.
It was a foreground miniature that they shot with and real like. Captured on the same frame of film.
Yep.
Fucking rad, dude.
Amazing. So cool.
But so Malik observes there's hundreds of reserve soldiers guarding the palace gate. We should quit. Conan says, no, there must be another way in. And Malik, he lets it slip that there is a secret way in. So they ride around back, I guess, to where there's a waterfall. Malik says there's a tunnel behind the waterfall. He knows this because his cousin's sister's brother dug his way out while he was a prisoner here. So the groundwork is now laid for, I think, one of the funnier bits in the movie like who's on first type shit.
Yeah.
It's coming up. Back inside, Taramis is sneaking some white powder into a glass of wine as Jenna is being brought into the chamber. They've changed into their finery. Taramis, like, couldn't look more evil. Like, she's in this dominatrix gear that she's almost wearing with, like, the spiked collar and shit.
Baller costume, though. I was totally there for
it. You're into it.
Yeah.
So Taramis... This is weird. Says, today is your birthday. This is a weird thing to say to someone. Today is your birthday. Here, have a drink. Like, to, drink to life. Like, that's fucking, that's a weird thing to say to somebody. Here, drink by yourself. Drink to life.
I think every kid knows when their birthday is. Yeah, I
mean, yeah. Today is your birthday. Drink, but yeah, she says, drink to life, to Dagoth. This is not how toasts work. Like, where here, you take a drink for just you and no one else. But that killed me. Like, drink to life. Nothing suspicious about this.
Everything checks out to me.
Jenna seemed a little bit like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And she drinks anyway to Dagoth, she says, and downs it. They're getting their money's worth out of that star filter, man.
Mm.
But so elsewhere, Conan and the others are climbing down this cliff beside the waterfall. Malak falls. Conan catches him, saves him. Conan gave him that look to say, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed in you. You know? Now, inside the castle, the ceremony is beginning in the temple. They're blasting that orgy music from the first Conan.
That's right. Exactly the same thing.
Which I assume that's like the orgy anthem for this world.
I just like the idea that the sex clubs, like this is blaring all times in every sex club.
It makes me think like if all goes according to plan, this ends with like some wild group action.
Oh yeah, big time. Like this is definitely
Do we reckon this is source music? Like can the characters hear this music? Is it being played?
Is it diegetic or non-diegetic? Yeah. That's a really good question.
I don't. I feel like they can hear it.
I feel like you're putting way too much analysis into this film. But yes, gun to my head, I'd say they can hear it. I feel like this is playing.
I saw no live musicians. So to me, it must be for our benefit only.
Then that makes that entire scene way quieter, and nobody likes a quiet
party.
It's an
awkward ceremony. Yeah. Can you imagine like an orgy with no music playing?
Weird. No, if I walk into an orgy and there's no music, I'm turning around.
Weird noises. It's a lot of weird noises. So Jenna, she's in a trance. She's bearing the horn as this priest begins reciting some sort of prayer. Yeah. Conan and the others, they come to this heavy iron bars that are blocking the tunnel behind the waterfall. Malak again wants them to turn back. Malak and Akira, then they start arguing about Malik's relationship to the person who dug the tunnel or whatever. And this is where he's like, Akira is saying something like your brother's cousin's sister or something. He's like, it's my cousin's sister's brother. How many times do I have to tell you that? That made me laugh out loud. I'll be honest. It's truly funny. But also we have to acknowledge, I think your cousin's sister's brother is the same thing as just your cousin's brother.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is also just the same thing as your cousin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just your cousin.
Unless there's like a lot of different marriages happening.
It
or something
felt like you
here.
Were like reducing fractions there. Yeah, like, you just find out that the answer is one.
I have a cousin who has a sister and a brother, and they're all my cousins.
They're all your cousins. Yeah.
Correct.
Nevertheless, Zula shuts down the argument. She's like, it doesn't matter whose brother, sister's cousin, or whatever it is. As Conan is like bending the bars open for everyone to fit through. So another feat of strength from Conan. Now, as Jenna brings the horn to the statue of Dagoth, the priest sidles up next to Taramis, tells her Jenna must be sacrificed the moment the Dagoth statue starts showing signs of life, or a terrible catastrophe will befall all of us. You got to hammer in for the people who haven't been paying attention, I think, like what the prophecy is.
I mean, this is an ADD or ADHD person's dream because they're constantly re-summarizing what the objective of the movie is.
So we did a podcast on Over the Top.
Okay. Yeah.
And at least 8 times they reiterate that it's a double elimination tournament. Like they keep saying it over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
So then when Stallone loses, they're like, now remember, this was double elimination. He's not out yet. You know, and it's like, oh, God, they must not think much of the audience. Like attention paying.
I mean, if you're paying to see Over the Top, which I have seen like 10 times.
Oh,
in
my God.
Life.
Same here.
I love that shit.
So many times.
So the Queen's priest or whatever, I looked him up because I'm always curious about like a lot of these people, like this is what your career has come to. But this dude probably, you know, is fucking playing Horatio with like Olivier in West End or something like that.
Yeah.
But this dude had like he'd been in some classic shit. He was in Cold Blood.
Oh, wow.
He was in Miracle on 34th Street, the old one. He was in Butch Cassidy.
Oh, wow.
He was in the original True Grit. as well, and I'm like, oh yeah, this dude is like,
he's been around.
Now he's delivering exposition in a barbarian movie. It's just like, oh boy. Yeah. You know, it is what it is.
Blacklisted in the 50s.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Right?
Wow. Yeah.
I saw he was like a Russian Jew, and I was like, oh, that sounds like it might have been bad times for him.
Yeah, unfortunately. Double whammy in that period of time.
Now, a couple of guards there, whatever, they're patrolling the castle dungeon. Conan and the others, they jump out and kill them with ease. They had that total, like, walleye effect going with the anamorphic lens, which was a recurring issue in this movie at times. Malik, he busted out his patented move, that double, like, kidney stab.
Right in the kidneys. People.
Yeah. So they proceed deeper into the castle. Jenna places the horn into the statue's forehead as the priest is reciting his prayers. Like, shit's getting real now. Like, the clock is ticking now. Conan and the company, they dispatch a couple more inept guards with an obvious, like, ruse. Let me toss a pebble out. And then he's like, that's me, Conan! And then, you know. I feel like Conan can hear the music, though. And he's like, is there an orgy happening in there? That was, like, as he's getting closer, you know. Yeah. But so they enter the next chamber. It's Taramis's bedroom, I think. Bombada's in there. Bombada then tosses his axe aside, and he removes his vest, which I'm like, why the fuck are you carrying that axe if the first thing you're going to do in a fight is toss it,
right?
But he raises his mace up. He and Conan, they start circling each other. Bombada starts swinging that mace, and Conan's fending it off, whatever. The others are just standing watching, not trying to help.
No.
Conan manages to get low and upend Bombada. Back inside the temple, Jenna, she's still in her trance. She's knelt down on the altar. The priest steps forward, bearing his dagger, and tilts her head back to expose her throat. Outside the castle, like, this supernatural storm is rising or whatever. The clouds are moving and freaking out everybody. It's a very overused, I think, effect of, like, this rapidly moving clouds, you know? It looked kind of shitty.
It looked like not Back to the Future, Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked exactly like that from Ghostbusters.
With reflection, yeah, there's just tons of movies were doing this.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like this movie actually, like, had a ton of effects shots in it.
Oh, my God.
I was thinking about, like, compared to Red Dawn, the last movie we talked about, which had no effect, like, no visual effects. Everything was shot on camera. Like, if there was a plane that blew up, they built a life-size plane. They didn't blow up a model or whatever. Yeah. It was all, like,
again, super impressive special effects, but very
different. Yeah, this was, like, an effects-heavy movie. Yeah. It's like, wow, there's a million model shots and forced perspective and composite shit. Doesn't always look great, but, you know, they were trying, I guess. But so back inside, the Dagoth statue starts to move.
I gotta mention,
bring it,
please.
Why is the Dagoth statue in Burt Reynolds pose? even from the beginning of the movie, I was like, that's that poster.
Seductive.
And it distracted me every time it fucking showed up.
It wasn't hairy enough for me to get that excited.
It's the exact same.
So Taramis, she gets very excited. She gives the order for the priest to kill Jenna. The priest, moving impossibly slowly, like, starts to raise his knife in slow motion. You know, the priest, I feel like more than anyone, is, like, aware of how perilous how they're playing with, they're flirting with disaster here.
Right,
like, now he's taking his sweet time. So as Conan and Bombada continue to duel, Conan tells the others to go and save Jenna. Finally, there's, like, some sense of urgency from someone.
I know.
So those guys charge into the temple, but they're on this balcony overlooking, like, everything that's happening. Zula chucks her her spear and stabs the dude. It's a pretty rad kill. Yeah. Clutch throw.
Again, Zula's, like, the winner of this movie for me.
Her and Conan were, like, the most necessary heroes, right?
I would argue that you could cut this cast down just a little bit and, like, combine parts.
Yeah.
You know, take Malik and
make him a wizard.
Yes, exactly.
Some minor wizard skills.
Yeah, exactly.
Just make the wizard his sidekick. Mm-hmm. The whole
Absolutely.
Movie. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we wouldn't have had the battle against the
cousin battle.
The cannibals or whatever.
Oh,
earlier.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Where they rest. We had been 10 minutes without anyone getting their head chopped off.
But they could have had cool magic tricks instead, you know?
So off mic, Kyle was saying that Conan world revolves around monsters and magic.
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah.
So the first movie you thought was like thin on that.
Yeah.
And this one captures that spirit a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, not till you get to Tulsa Doom, you know, turning into the snake thing at the end.
Yeah.
That's the closest you get to like supernatural elements in that movie. This one has tons of that stuff. This kind of like Ray Harryhausen kind of vibe. Where he, you know, he's got
an army of skeletons and stuff. Yeah, that type of shit. Okay, yeah.
Things like that are more endemic to what Conan is kind of all about.
Uh-huh.
It's just, you know, Conan's also not a comedy. So, I mean, it's not a family comedy. So,
agree to disagree.
Well, it is this movie, isn't it? Which this more people
movie,
have seen.
And honestly, truly, this movie isn't even, I feel like, in agreement with itself about what it wants to
right,
be.
This
true,
movie never
right?
could figure out what it wanted to be.
But so, now the Dagon statue, it starts to transform into something more grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
This is the bit that I mentioned previously that like really brought back memories from watching this movie as a kid. It was like this scene with the statue turning into the monster and that scene where he fought Man-Ape, the monster earlier. That's the stuff that I feel like sticks with like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Like watching that you can be 30 years later and like remember like, oh yeah, I remember the hell
out
of
that. Yeah, like the neurons reconnect, right? Like, oh yeah, oh, there it is.
So outside, Bambada knocks Conan down and like goes to hit him with this giant vase. Then Bambada dives on top of Conan. They're wrestling around, whatever. Inside, Taramis is alarmed as the ceremony's going off the rails. I feel like this was always a very possible outcome of this, but has it ever been made clear also, like, what is Taramis's motivation here, that she just wants to bring the god back to life? Does she want to control him too? Like,
I mean, I think what she wants is to get a piece of that sweet, sweet Burt Reynolds action.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been horny for that statue
absolutely.
The get-go. I'm with you on that. That could be the entire thing. It's like, I'll be his queen, and me and Dagoth will like rule the universe together or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So Dagoth, though, he's turning into this gruesome horned monster. Bambada is fighting with Conan still. He bites his ear. Conan.
We don't even see him bite the ear. Like,
there's just a lot of blood
He's going for it. They cut away, and then there's the bite marks.
So now blood's everywhere, whatever. Conan, then he pulls a knife out of Bambada's belt. Starts like stabs him around his kidneys or whatever. I like that Bambada had this knife on him and he wasn't using it. He prefers to grapple.
When you're that big,
I'm gonna leave this knife unused. I choose not to use it. But now both men get to their feet. They fight on a little bit more in the courtyard or whatever. The ceremony is descending into chaos. Taramis orders her soldiers to kill Jenna. I feel like it's already too late
at this point, because
you put the genie back in the bottle at
this
point.
Exactly. It's done.
Like, this thing's a monster already. But outside, Bambada, he's recovered his mace. He goes to finish Conan off, but Conan stabs him in the chest with that knife. Bambada finally is dead. Rest in peace, Bambada.
Rest in peace, Bambada.
And Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
And his movie career. This is like the only film he ever did. I think he did, like, he was in a couple of other things playing Wilt Chamberlain. You know, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, no,
like,
yeah,
he's like him as himself in whatever, The Fishes Save Pittsburgh or something. So inside the temple, Jenna seems to be snapping out of whatever the trance was that she was in. Taramis grabs her by the wrist and she's trying now to reach for a dagger. I feel like the ship has sailed. I don't know what, like, killing Jenna now, what it would even happen.
Satisfaction.
Nothing's going to be accomplished at this point. So Conan, he joins the others up on the balcony. He sees a pair of guards down below, jumps off the balcony onto those two dudes, which is like a patented Conan move. I think he's done it in that and in Red Sonja. He did it in the original Conan and in Red Sonja as well. Old school, like, action stunt, right?
Yeah.
So now Taramis gets a dagger. She's getting ready to stab Jenna, but then Conan runs in and he shoves her right into Dagoth, who is fully morphed now into this gigantic, hideous monster. And that's Andre the Giant.
That is.
Yeah.
And those pictures you mentioned, like the pictures of Andre the Giant and Wilt Chamberlain with Arnold, where they're holding him like by his armpits, like he's a small child or something. That is insane to
Overwhelming.
It's wild how tiny they make Arnold look. But Dagoth, he gores Taramis right through her abdomen with his horn, which I feel like was halfway like what she's been wanting
to
this whole
extent.
Time, right? That's like her kink. This whole movie has been like wanting to whatever.
I mean, the MacGuffin, the second MacGuffin was the horn, so.
Yeah. So Conan, then he tells the others to get back. He goes mano a mano with Dagoth. Starts slashing him across the chest and he gets shoved down. There was like tons of blood pouring out of these wounds.
Yeah.
There's another soldier tries to attack Dagoth and is quickly gets killed by getting his head stepped on. Yeah. Zula sends the others further back. She's looking for her opening to jump in for a really long time. She's like looking for the perfect opportunity. Meanwhile, Conan, he's back up. He slashes Dagoth across the chest again. He gets knocked down again. Dagoth tries to stomp on Conan. Conan rolls away. Conan gets up again. Dagoth grabs him by the head. He seems like he's like going to crush his head like fucking Pedro Pascal in Game of Thrones or something. You know? Zula, she's patiently waiting.
Still for that opening.
No hurry. She slowly moves around behind the monster and raises her spear and finally like stabs him. Dagoth tail whips or knocks her off her feet. Conan then grabs his sword back up. He hacks away at Dagoth, but the monster gets a hold of Conan by each arm and is like, seems like he's ready to rip him apart or something. This Dagoth had that weird sort of vertical mouth.
Yeah.
That I thought it was very memorable as well. Yeah. Like from a kid watching it, I'm like, that's weird.
I mean, it's a cool monster design. I like the Dagoth monster.
He had like, there was a lot of articulation. Like his eyes are opening and closing. And I'm like, compared to how shitty Manape looked earlier, which is just like a Party City mask or something, like
the cloak.
They put all the money into making Dagoth look awesome.
I know my new Halloween costume. I'm totally going as Man-Ape.
Definitely not Ape. Not to be confused with Ape Man. He's Man-Ape.
Man-Ape.
That's such a weird name.
I mean, I think it has to do with the the ratio between man versus ape, right?
He's half bear, half man pig.
That's what Winston Duke's character in Black Panther was named in the comics. Man-Ape.
Really?
That's correct.
Now Conan's in danger. Jenna screams. Malak pulls this small knife out and chucks it right into Dagoth's face, which is a bullseye, like hits him right in the snout or something, and like blood starts pouring out like it's a faucet. It's like, for a literal god, this thing seems pretty vulnerable. Like it's getting hurt. Like it seems pretty easy to hurt this thing. I don't know. But Dagoth releases Conan. He comes after Jenna and Malak and Akiro. They run and hide as this massive lightning starts striking and hitting the castle and like huge chunks of it are falling down and everything like that. Dagoth seems like he's controlling the lightning as he's just wrecking this place. Akiro yells to Conan that Dagoth's life is tied to the horn. He must tear out the horn. Crazy shit. That's Akiro's contribution. To the finale of the movie. That's it.
Yeah.
Told him, rip the horn out.
Akira could have thrown that dagger into his mouth.
Put some, use some magic to weaken him or something. It was weird. Yeah, there were too many characters with not enough to do in this. That's a fatal flaw. But Conan's solution, he tosses his sword aside and jumps on Dagoth's back. He wrestles with him, gets a hold of that horn, and with brute strength, he starts to rip it off. And like, this shit was nasty.
Yeah. It goes on forever too.
In extreme like close up detail of like all the sinew and everything. It's like under the horn. It was like, as everyone else is looking on, you know, shocked and disgusted, but not helping. But I remember this as like being the grossest thing as a kid I think I'd ever seen.
Like
when he's ripping that horn off. Like his blood starts pouring out and everything. It's just like gruesome. So Conan, he finally rips the horn completely off. Dagoth lets out this hideous shriek. Conan tosses the horn aside in a comical almost way. He's like looking at it. He's like, fuck, I don't want this. He picks up his sword. Dagoth then starts crawling towards Conan, finally collapses, and this disgusting like green shit starts pouring out of the whole horn.
Who knew he was a Vulcan?
This horn hole. It's so nasty, dude. I felt like I could like smell it, you know, through the screen. I was just like, it's so gross to me.
Yeah.
Conan's not taking any chances. He steps forward and he stabs him with the sword right through his head. He's seen enough movies to know.
Yeah.
You don't trust that the monster's dead.
We have to just say it's now canon. This thing is not actually a god. We have to assume this thing is like a monster that they worship, right?
I mean, was Tathamon not a more formidable opponent?
Yes.
Than Dagoth here.
Yeah.
That might be a flaw in the writing of this movie or the way they mapped it out.
Well, yeah, I would agree. He's Conan's biggest villain. He probably should have gotten more time.
Dagoth was a statue for 90% of this movie.
That's true. So, yeah, Kyle was also telling us that Toth Amon, the throwaway middle of the movie villain, was like the big bad in Conan comics.
In the comics. He shows up a couple times in the books. Okay. But it's in the comics where he becomes like, you know, the Doctor Doom of Conan.
Oh, basically. Wow.
Yeah, and they just wasted him in the middle of a second movie of what ought to be a franchise,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, as we were saying, the role that James Earl Jones played in the first movie should have been Toth Amon, but I guess they just like the name Tulsa Doom better.
It is a better name.
It's a cool name. You know?
It sounds like a metal band,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It probably is a metal
I think
band.
You might be right, actually.
There is a German metal band called Amandul. So it's not far off.
Yeah. You know, I was gonna tell you, I've never told you this before, Kevin, but before I ever knew what the Riddle of Steel was, I saw a band in Kansas City called Riddle of Steel.
Okay.
So that's how I learned that phrase, and then I heard it in Conan and I thought, oh, that's where it comes from. Okay.
But there was a lot of overlap on that Venn diagram of like barbarian flicks and dudes who are into like metal.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty narrow Venn diagram.
It's almost an eclipse.
Yeah. It's almost an eclipse.
It is, yeah.
Now, in another, we got to give Malik some props here. In a funny moment, he comes running in with his other little knife and stabs Dagoth with it and puts his foot up on him like conquering hero. Yeah. That was funny. Now, cut to sometime later, but how much later, I don't know, because the temple's been fully repaired, it seems.
Right.
So they're going with the full Star Wars ending.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe they went full Star Wars. That was a lot.
A big ceremony to honor the heroes. Starfilter is back on.
Big time.
Jenna appoint Zula as the captain of her queen's guard, which Zula then looks to Conan, seemingly like asking for permission. Is this okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe because she had like pledged her life to serve Conan earlier.
Okay.
So that one I buy.
Fair.
Okay. Then she appoints Malik to be her royal fool, and Malik looks to Conan for like approval. Which I don't know that's necessary. Also, I don't even know, is that a good gig for him? Like, I mean, it's fitting, right? But like,
okay,
is that like a comfortable life?
I'm just going to posit this. He is a thief. He's a fool. So he's going to be in a lot of the queen's parties as he's moving around, being jocular and all these
stealing.
Things. He's fucking pickpocketing every motherfucker in the room, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is super lucrative for him. Yeah. I'm all about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then she calls Akiro forward and asks if he'll be her wise advisor. And he also sort of turns to Conan, which I feel like this is getting a little too much. Like, is it, we got to show that Conan's still in charge. we gotta, is that misogynist filmmaking? Like, which is maybe a dumb question in this type of movie to even ask.
Or maybe, in fairness, this is the only time I'm going to defend this movie. Maybe.
Boy, everybody be quiet for a second.
They feel as though they have some friendly loyalty to Conan.
Maybe Conan's their consigliere as well.
He's their buddy. And, you know, it's like, well, do I choose to potentially abandon my buddy to go, you know, work?
Is this okay with Conan?
It's like being in a house party and you come with your buddy, but you find a girl and you want to go hook up with her. You do the glance at your buddy real quick just to get the permission. Like, you're going to do it anyway. It's a courtesy look, you know? That's exactly what this is. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'm with it, guys. I'm sold. Now, finally, Conan steps forward, and everyone seems to be dressed in their finest shit except for Conan, who's wearing the least amount of clothes we've seen him wearing the whole movie. He's wearing those little fur, like, hot pants.
It's full-on He-Manning.
Straight up. By the power of Grayskull.
So Jenna asks Conan to stay and rule the kingdom with her. He says he's going to have his own kingdom and his own queen. He's a man of conviction. Like, that's been his goal, I think, even since the first Conan movie, almost. Yeah. So Jenna gives him a kiss, but it's a very chaste, thank God, because this is a 14-year-old.
He also doesn't kiss her back.
Thank God they went that way. It was a weird moment, but it's good that it wasn't more than what it was, right? So Conan walks away. He pauses for a moment, then he continues on and exits. Jenna's got fucking tears in her eyes when they cut back to her close up. Like, such was her desire to bone Conan.
I mean, look, we all want to be wanted like that.
So, cut to the Conan ending, which is him sitting alone on a throne.
I remember that this is like embedded in my brain.
Yeah, both
like,
movies.
I will never forget those.
Both Conan flicks ended very similarly. Yeah. Is that this one has some Akira voiceover saying, "So it was that Conan mourned his lost Valeria. At length, he sought adventure in distant lands and trod the jeweled thrones of the earth beneath his sandaled feet, until at last he found his own kingdom and wore his crown upon a troubled brow." And then the text pops up, but that is another story.
That we'll never see.
That we'll never see.
That's a bummer, right?
We'll
like, I definitely wanted to see other Conan adventures on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, like a kid.
They were trying for years to get Conan the King, like, get that off the ground, and it just never got any momentum.
Which, I don't know. I feel like the time for this that type of movie is maybe past the like the big, muscled up sort of epic quest thing.
Well, I think the time of Conan is completely past.
Yeah.
I mean, every time someone's like, "I got the license for Conan," it's like, who cares?
I don't care.
Like, no one cares anymore.
Are they still cranking out any Conan content, like comics or anything?
Yeah. They have new comics right now that one publisher has been putting out, but no one's reading
them. Not great?
Them.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they're good or not, but nobody's reading them. I mean.
Now, I know that Arnold, though, was ready to move on from this type of stuff that he was doing. I think it was Commando. Then he had some comment in an interview where he said, you know, he's happy to be doing something other than playing like a caveman or a robot, which had been like his whole career up until that point or whatever. He also, though, got like conned by Dino De Laurentiis into doing Red Sonja.
Oh,
I think that's another part of the reason why there's never any more Conan movies, that relationship had gone sour. Like, do you guys know that story?
Yeah, I'm slightly familiar where he plays Caecilus or whatever.
Calidor.
Calidor, sorry. Yes.
But he basically agreed to do a cameo where he'd like come and shoot a scene or whatever for a week or something. And then, you know, then it was like he was there for a month. And then he had chopped his scenes up and spread them out through the whole movie where he's like in 50% of the movie now. But he had some deal with Dino De Laurentiis where he's like going to be in a certain amount of movies for him. And Dino didn't want to count that one, though, towards these. That was a cameo. That wasn't a real role. And that's like they were suing each other and shit like that. Oh, I think ultimately Arnold agreed that he'd do the movie Raw Deal.
Yeah.
And then they'd be done with their relationship or whatever. But yeah, technically he wasn't Conan in Red Sonja. He was Calidor. Although people have like now tried to retcon it and say, well, that's Calidor is like his traveling name.
Exactly. Like, really? Like Strider is to
like
Aragorn.
Strider, like Gandalf was also Mithrandir and he was the Grey Pilgrim.
I don't know why anybody's trying to salvage that film.
I mean, we did that one previously on the podcast. I feel like it's on par with this one, you know, like it delivers what you came to see, I guess.
Yeah, that's another film that they're trying to make again.
Yes, another Red Sonja? Is it still Rose McGowan?
No.
That was like Robert Rodriguez. For the longest time wanted to make that happen.
He even mocked up a movie poster when he announced it at Comic-Con a decade or more ago at this point. And so there is a movie poster out there floating around with Rose McGowan playing Red Sonja. And I remember seeing that she was cast in it, and I'm like, two things. A, he's totally fucking her, and which he was. And B, like, she is way too petite to be Red Sonja. I mean, like, not what I envisioned that character to be.
I feel like that... First of all, I feel like Xena Warrior Princess is like already sort of happened, right? That sort of thing's been done. I do feel like it lends itself more to an episodic thing than trying to do movies.
I mean, like Lucy Lawless can do no wrong in my mind, honestly. Yeah. I
never seen any of those or the Hercules
show.
Oh,
they're awful. I mean, they're terrible, but they're so much fun, though. Okay. I mean, just like they're awful, but also amazingly fun.
It also has like the darkest ending for a TV show.
Oh, my God.
I can remember.
Xena does? Xena, what happens?
Jesus. I'm not going to spoil it.
No, you got to watch the fucking show.
Oh, that's never going to happen.
Also, it's like, look at the wiki.
I'll be on Wikipedia later.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil on the podcast.
But as Eric pointed out when we started this movie, it did better business globally than the first one did, even though it's like, obviously inferior, but I think probably because it was rated PG and not R or whatever, but this was one of the last like borderline PG movies. I think later that year they they introduced the PG-13 rating. So it was like this movie
and Red Dawn.
And Red Dawn was the first ever PG-13.
Yeah.
But
that's right. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yes.
So it was this movie and Gremlins and Temple of Doom all came out. Right. And they were like, we need something else. This is not like, necessarily for kids. Like, dudes ripping people's hearts out and like the Gremlin in the microwave and stuff like that.
It really is the Conan movies though that bookend the sword and sorcery like phase. Like the first Conan came out, you had all the ripoffs. I mean, a ton of ripoffs that you're familiarizing yourself with.
Watching the Ator movie, Ator,
the Barbarians, and Deathstalker should be next, probably.
Okay.
No, it shouldn't be. I just
are any of them like other than Beastmaster? Are any of them redeemable?
You know, the Sword and the Sorcerer is not terrible.
Okay.
That one came out about the same time as Conan.
I think I might have seen that.
That's the one where he has like the blade that shoots another blade out.
You know,
just regular practical weapons.
A bull from Night Court is the is like the evil sorcerer.
Did it also feature that dude, the actor from Ghostbusters 2, the like the little minion to
Oh, what's his face? Like Viggo.
Minion to Viggo. Yeah. Was he in that one or was he in some other sword and sorcery movie?
Oh, man, I don't remember.
It might have been a different one.
I don't want to say something incorrect.
They were cranking a lot of bullshit out, though.
Oh, like, no, he was in Dragon Slayer.
Dragon Slayer.
That's another good movie, actually.
It's actually good?
That's an actually good movie.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. that is directed by a guy who co-writes movies with Guillermo del Toro now.
Oh, oh shit. Wow.
Yes. Okay. That guy has actually made some badass movies, including this one with Helen Slater. Oh no, what is it called? Oh, it's going to drive me nuts.
You can look it up if you want.
I'm going
to
look it up.
We'll
I'm
going to
look
it up. The dead air.
Oh man, it is this movie fucking rules. And I just watched it the other day. Where it's like her and Christian Slater are in this movie together. They play siblings, and it is called The Legend of Billie Jean. Yes, it is like a Joan of Arc story set in like the South in the early 80s. It is awesome.
Okay.
It is so awesome.
Rad. All right. I always know I like a good movie wreck anytime, and no Kyle's worries. Got a very interesting and unique take. You collect what the Vinegar Syndrome box sets. You love a good bad movie.
Oh, I do.
We recently watched Gymkata together.
Oh, Gymkata!
Neither of us had ever seen it before. It was fucking wild. thought it couldn't get any weirder, they go to Cannibal Village or whatever.
I still laugh when that guy's like, you know what's really interesting about her? She's from the Philippines. Kevin was like, oh, that is interesting. I don't know if that's the country they said she's from, but it's still so funny to me. I still laugh about it.
Oh, my God. But yeah, as I think mentioned earlier, this movie shared sets with Dune, which I guess they were both filming in Mexico, wherever they did this, and I could see the big desert vistas like in the early, early parts of this movie. Could definitely also have been like same locations they filmed some Dune shit on. Now, Eric and I explored in our previous series on Red Dawn, which is another 1984 movie. The 1984 was a fucking killer year for great movies. So I want to hear what you were loving from that year. I'll throw out highlights from that year, in addition to the ones we've mentioned already. Ghostbusters was out that year. Beverly Hills Cop, Romancing the Stone, Karate Kid, Red Dawn, Gremlins, Temple of Doom. Anything from those that list jump out at you, or anything else that?
Well, I like Blood Simple a lot.
Oh, that was fucking 84.
That was 84. Yeah.
That's way earlier than I would have thought.
Wow, yeah. Arlie Ermey, right? Like just an amazing villain turn.
Oh yeah. I love Blood Simple. Let's see.
Kyle and I, we're both big Karate Kid guys.
Yeah, that's true.
I have to stand outside of that milieu.
You don't love it?
I do not love Karate Kid.
Oh,
I'll be
no.
honest. Yeah.
Well, you're not invited to the Cobra Kai watch party.
Well, that's fine with me. So here's the thing. Like at my previous job, I ended up having to get really familiar with Cobra Kai for a couple of the articles that I was working on. And what I found was like all of the adult drama I was totally in for. I was totally bought in.
The high school drama
completely lost me, but I really don't like high school stuff, right? I don't know what it is. I just don't
care. I agree. I'm much more interested in what Johnny Lawrence is up to.
Yeah,
and his relationship and with like Kreese and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the kid drama.
And Mr. Silver, right? Yeah. Like he was Mr. a villain.
What a great bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, like all of that I was totally there for, but then half of the show is about the kids though.
Yeah, because they're doing a good job really of appealing to two totally different demographics.
Oh, they are. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like
the
nostalgia people plus the people who like shows like Teen Wolf or Riverdale or whatever, like, you know, teen drama
well,
stuff.
Well, let's be clear. Teen Wolf, the modern version.
The
not
series.
The classic
not the amazing. Yeah, it might have been 84. No, that was 85, I think, Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
A couple of 84 movies that I'm going to name off the top. The Last Starfighter.
Yes. Wow. That was
also
so good.
Starring the same lead actress, Night of the Comet.
Amazing. Fun fact, Night of the Comet. If you've ever seen Star Trek Voyager, Chakotay is one of the main protagonists of that movie, which took me half of the movie to realize. I'm like, oh shit, that's Chakotay.
Yeah. And also The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Wow, that was 84.
I didn't love that. I hate to say it.
It's a weird movie.
It was just, I think I needed to see it when I was younger, probably.
I wish I wasn't 3 years old in 1984 because that was an epic year for movies.
But almost any year you look at in the 80s is like that. Oh, like the 80s was like, because the technology had taken a leap forward, I feel like, about special effects and what we could do. Like, every year you had like a Back to the Future or a Top Gun or whatever coming out. It's like, Jesus Christ, they don't make this very rare to get a movie of that like staying power and everything anymore.
Yeah.
But Dune 2, by the way, fucking masterpiece.
Yeah,
I think.
Okay, stop. Denis Villeneuve. I have to go watch it like a plebeian. I didn't get to go to an early screening like some people in this room.
Oh my God, though. It's so fucking good, dude. I'm so happy. Yeah, it's just. Right. By every measure, bigger and better than the first one.
Is that this weekend?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but not by the time people are listening.
Well,
to
yeah, I know. But we're at this fast. Point, yeah.
It's on video already. Yeah. It's just streaming. Go check that out. Check out anything that Arnold Schwarzenegger's ever been in.
Oh, of course.
It's always a good time.
It's our bread and butter. Even End of Days in the Sixth Day.
Yeah, dude. Did you watch Sabotage?
No, I never saw Sabotage. It was like that's the recent one, right?
It was maybe David Ayer or somebody like.
I don't love David Ayer.
No, and it was like, but it was at least a gritty, real action movie. Anyway, it's set in Atlanta with cartel violence run amok, as we all as Atlanta. a lot of beheadings going on in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. There's
stuff,
not a day that goes by that I don't hear about.
That was the one bit about the movie that I'm like, that just not Atlanta, but you know, nevertheless. But check out Kyle on ScreenRex.com, ScreenRex.com for his film reviews. Anything else you want to mention before we say goodbye?
Yeah. I'm still in the midst plugging away on the edits on my debut horror novel that I hope will have.
Untitled at this point?
I have a tentative title, but until I finalize it, I don't want to canonize. title that will be thrown
you're
in the garbage
in
a
you're
couple weeks.
In.
So, but I'm hoping to have that out sometime by the fall, winter.
So
maybe.
Keep your eyes on Amazon, maybe
Kyle
Pinion.
Unless there's some cooler news later. So
okay, awesome. But thanks as always for joining us, all of our listeners, and everyone on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. We love you guys too. If you're listening to us there, please check us out on our regular 6 Degrees feed. We have some episodes there that have never been on the podcast network. We also release a couple days earlier there. So, you know, you can spoil the latest 6 Degrees episode for
all your friends.
All your friends. No, who are we kidding? If you're listening to this, you don't have friends.
Unless they watch the same movies we watch.
No, that's what I realized. Every dude who's in our age bracket grew up watching all the same shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's Van Damme movies and fucking whatever was on TBS or TNT or USA, like, over the top, you know, it's all the same shit. Right. It's all the same frames of reference.
Mm-hmm.
So I love getting with you guys and talking about these weird movies, especially the weird ones.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for our next one.
Yeah.
But no spoilers.
No spoilers yet. It's going to be a very special episode, though. Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Your family.
Get everybody to subscribe. Get warmed up because the next one's going to be one for the record books.
Okay. And with that, good night and good luck. And we'll be back.
We'll be back.